create a serviceable myth. They share Napoleon Bonaparte's view. History is lies, commonly agreed upon. This is manifestly what has happened with Ronald Reagan and much of the punditariat. It is driven by the official myth-makers on the right, but it too often goes unchallenged or even echoed by the other side. Hence, the image of Ronald Reagan as a great president is the dominant view among the largely white American commentariat. However, the distinguished presidential historian, Stephen E. Ambrose, a biographer of Presidents Eisenhower and Nixon, offers a different view. Reagan will be remembered as the president who reversed the decades-old flow of power to Washington. By dismissing some federal programs and reducing others, he forced the states and the cities to assume more responsibility for running their own shows. Ambrose goes on to argue that history will also remember Reagan as the first Cold War president to preside over 8 years of unbroken peace, the first to reach an arms reduction accord with the Soviets, and the American president who helped make it possible for Mikhail Gorbachev to begin the process of restructuring Soviet society, end of quote. Professor Ambrose also credits Reagan with the popularity of conservatism in America. However, he warns, these are important changes, but not of such a magnitude to earn Reagan a title of great. The great presidents are the ones who bring permanent changes in society. Teddy Roosevelt and conservation and trust busting, or Woodrow Wilson and the Federal Reserve System, Franklin Roosevelt and Social Security, Harry Truman and the integration of the armed forces, Dwight Eisenhower and the interstate highway system, Lyndon Johnson and Medicare and civil rights, end of quote. By this standard, Barack Obama already qualifies as one of the greatest, since he brought about several profound and lasting changes in American society. The Lilly Ledbetter Act, ending the ban against homosexuals openly serving in the military, and the Affordable Health Care Act are all game changers of historic proportions. And the Recovery Act, or stimulus, is revolutionizing the American economy, creating the first green manufacturing sector powered by clean energy, and revamping the educational system to bring America's students up to snuff in math and science so they can compete in the brave new world of the 21st century, among many other wonderful things. And he did it while waging two foreign wars and rescuing the American economy from a free fall collapse. He achieved these things, furthermore, without the benefit of a statesman like the legendary House Speaker Tip O'Neill leading the opposition. John Bonner, the present Weeper of the House, is no Tip O'Neill. For all these reasons and more, I have no doubt that future historians, far removed from the political passions of this moment, will place Barack Obama heads and shoulders above Ronald Reagan on the scale of great presidents. Furthermore, I am absolutely convinced that when they consider the fact that a black guy with a Muslim name managed to get himself elected president of the United States, a country that instructed the Nazis on racism not that long ago, they will also conclude with me that Barack Obama is easily the most gifted politician in American history. From New York City, this is Plato Benjamin with a commentary on the times.
And that's some of the news for Wednesday, September 26, 2012. The news was produced in New York with Jose Santiago, Rebecca Miles, and Plato Benjamin. I'm Andrea Sears in New York for the WBAI, listener-supported news.
Hey, I never received my premium for my last pledge to WBAI Pacifica Radio.
You didn't? Well, it takes 6 to 8 weeks after your pledge for delivery. And there is now a premium customer care hotline you can call at 212-209-2845. That's 212-209-2845. Or if you want to follow up online, there's a form on the website, WBAI.org. Just click on About WBAI and look for premium customer care on the pull-down menu.
Hey, thanks. That's good to know.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the Feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, okay, we went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
Everyone loves a buddy. A buddy makes you feel wanted, loved, and appreciated. They're always there for you no matter what. Now you can become a buddy to WBAI. A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a recurring donation to WBAI using either a credit or debit card or by electronic funds transfer from your bank account. It's safe, secure, and easy. It's simple, automatic, and it helps to keep our unique, alternative, and diverse programming on the air. And you help to cut down the number of on-air fund drive days. The BAI Buddy is a friend you can rely on through thick and thin. Sign up online, go to WBAI.org and click on Donate for all the details. Be a buddy, a WBAI buddy.
Hello, listeners and supporters. I'm Kathy Davis, the Public Affairs Director for WBAI Radio, with an audio note. We are working hard at completing your pledges and sending out your premium gifts. We remind you that in order to facilitate this process, we are now adding the shipping and handling costs to each pledge. We trust and hope that you will understand and support our need to cover these costs in order to facilitate a more efficient and successful process of fulfillment. All of us thank you for your continued support of WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org.
And WBAI, this is listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 megahertz FM. And need I express to you how important it is to have that broadcast signal, because it's real time and it's unmonitored. This is WBAI New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. My name is Robert Knight. Welcome to this edition of Earthwatch.
The bell for freedom still rings. The bell for freedom still rings. Sorrow to me, but does it ring to know the bell of freedom still rings? The hammer for justice still pounds. The hammer for justice still pounds. The beating sound of the hammer for justice that pounds. When the will the world stop and listen, when will we all stop and see? That the man in the moon must have found, 'cause he looks upon us with a frown, to know that millions of babies still starve. Millions of babies still starve. We can't have the biggest heart if millions of babies still starve. And the innocent ones still die. The innocent ones still die. We can't value life too high if the innocent ones still die. When will the world stop enlisting? When will we all stop and see? He looks upon us with a frown. Light of truth we won't let shine. Light of truth we won't let shine. Tell me, has the world gone blind? Light of truth we won't let shine. As long as there's life, there's still a day. As long as there's life, there's still a day. And I know that we can find our way. For as long as there's life, there's still a day.
And this is Earth Watch on WBAI in New York on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight. And this is a freeform radio program in which we engage in the viaducts between our dreams. And I come to you today with a nightmare, and I hope you can help. Later on, we'll take phone calls at 212-209-2900. But it is with a very sad and heavy heart that I come to you tonight because of some things I witnessed today. And it made me have a Gethsemane moment about the very mission of this radio station and about the strength and persistence of our listeners and lovers in the face of uncontrolled passions that tend to oppose our mission of justice and, above all, peace. To understand antagonism and diminish the differences that cause the seemingly eternal strife of war and disunderstanding. I swear to God, I was brought to tears earlier tonight when I saw something that scared the shock out of me. It happened just a few short minutes after I got off the air from another program I do called 5 o'clock Shadow. You know, and in the minutes after the show, you know, I check in the interwebs. And I saw a message there that was at that moment in time only 17 minutes old. And that message included a video of an obscenity that reminded me of too many things. It was a video of A damn near lynching. A damn near lynching right here in New York City, the capital of global enlightenment. Earlier today, because I understand that you cannot move around the city and be plugged into your internet, and that the radio is a precious thing. And that is why, you know, there are fools out trying to destroy that concept. But the idea of free, immediate, unmonitored flash mob broadcast is the essence of what WBAI can be as a catalytic social force or conscience or whatever else you might construe it to be. And it was thus that, in addition to following up on our producer Thiago Brozo's great report on the Mexican deaths from the American-inspired drug war in Mexico, we heard not only the ambassador, or the president, actually, Calderón of Mexico, speaking about another way to deal with drug chaos and prohibition. And then, given all the calumny, all the slander, all the lies, all the libels, all the mistranslations of Farsi, and the Giuliani-esque lynch mob assembled outside the United Nations earlier today, instigated by Fox and perpetuated by insufficiently scrutinous corporate network media, there was a lynch mob out in Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza. Even those words bring me pain. For so many events of peace, justice, and understanding that I have attended at that location and reported on from there. But today was a dark day of the soul of America. And a lynch mob was out there, presuming that the domain of American ignorance should be extended to the military execution of a nation that is complying with its own energy development needs, that is consistent with the protocols and surprise inspections and investigations of the International Atomic Energy Agency. But just as I have seen in my international reporting over so many years, the vilification of an individual is something that Americans can emotionally relate to. Thus, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, target barely a month ago of an explosive attack on the electrical supply lines to one of their civilian nuclear energy development systems. Harassed and assaulted by Rudolph Giuliani before New Yorkers were so callous as to elect, through violation of charter law, an even more vicious mayor. And there they were, the lynch mob outside the United Nations, saying nothing about the unleashing by your president, Barack Obama, of Al-Qaeda. And yes, I do say Al-Qaeda because I have had discussions on the air where great scholars have insisted, well, we can't say it's Al-Qaeda because everybody brings rocket launchers to these demonstrations outside in Benghazi, Tripoli, in Libya. I knew I was right. Although it's faint proof to see that today the Secretary of State, Hillary Rodham Clinton, after the better part of a month of lying, now admits it, because it was too embarrassing at the time to admit that dumbass Barack Obama was full of it. And he said, I got Al-Qaeda on the run. Yeah, it was Al-Qaeda or a franchise thereof. That, in what now is not even proven to be the presence of the anti-Muslim film protest, did a damn well targeted and highly militarily precise execution of an assault on diplomatic property. Underline those words, diplomatic property. In the form of the United States consulate in Benghazi, Libya, where dumbass Obama unleashed the Libyan Islamic fighting group, Al-Qaeda, the Mujahideen, so he could use them to overthrow Syria. This is a dangerously incompetent presidency that we're under, and an evil directorship of the State Department of the United States of America. So, Pandora, yes, Pandora's box, unleashed by these two arch-villains, Obama and Clinton, have emboldened around the world not just the fond fools they cultivated with the Alliance for Youth Movements in 2008 that was a precursor to the color-coded so-called revolutions of State Department favorites around the world, regardless of the independent indigenous freedom movements, which one does respect, but which get hijacked by the tools of the State Department, or in the case of Obama, the covert warfare that is very simpatico with using Salafi jihadis as a tool of statecraft? My God, it's not a question of whether one might or might not vote for him. It's a question of whether he should be impeached. And it is into this environment that you all are letting Obama and Clinton conduct even as we speak in Syria. Y'all ain't done nothing. Occupy has been unoccupied. Where have you been? You know, Occupy talks about Occupy, but I really don't see a mass peace movement at this point in time. I see a very useful therapeutic set of behaviors that sometimes bring diverse people together, but which is more Woodstock than tree trunk. You know, I'm not seeing the next step here. And I love Occupy, and you know, I was the first one to love and cover them. So it is in this confusion of American media, this confusion of fond forgiveness, and by fond I mean it in the classical definition of fond, meaning stupid, that most of us have given one of the most fascist presidents in American history a chance to get away with stuff because you're black, or because you voted for him, or some stupid stuff. And Obama has unleashed a zealotry upon this planet through his criminal overthrow of Libya. How dare they talk about serious self-defense after what they did? in Libya and unleashing the Cyrenaicans that are rounding up Negroes, Afro-Libyans, everywhere they can find them. They have destroyed towns that were slave colonies in which they had lived. This is what your black president did. And it is this Pandora's box, this feast of demons and insects unleashed by Obama with callous disregard to the ethics, but only the popularity of a presidency rerun, that now there is unleashed and enabled on this planet a fanaticism and zealotry that will destroy us all. And it's not just the people who are doing that I'm talking about today. Ladies and gentlemen, I am talking about something bigger even than the evil that Obama and Clinton have wrought upon this nation and this world. I'm talking about a mass psychosis aided by media, abetted by the internet. Reinforced, echoed, and reflected in the stupid and hateful gossip boards, some of which are even about this radio station, and you know what I mean. And the blog sites that magnetize zealots and haters. There is a new electromagnetic wave upon the national brain. One of hatred and ignorance and destructive therapy. So you go to any of these websites I'm talking about, and you'll see like yards after yards after yards after yards of comments of ignorant people making fun of foreign cultures, not understanding the first jot or tittle about the reality of international politics, cultural history, political aspirations, or the needs of justice, of equity among races and genders and preferences, and nationalities and cultures and heritage. And it's just beginning to dawn on me, and I want you to help me with this tonight, that the more conductive electrolytes of the national brain, and by more conductive electrolytes, I mean the proliferation of BS information, the unregulated, I'm not talking about censorship here, I'm talking about ethically and intellectually unregulated proliferation of things that you read, and you can get your little Jones on, man, and you can get all hyped up for anything you might have been missing, you know, because you get all excited about hating somebody, right? There's a phenomenon we learned back there in engineering school involving the Laplace transform, which is a mathematical way of geometrically identifying how a circuit or a function works. And it's a very clever way of mapping phenomena into an analog, as it were, of a differential equation, and putting it on crosshairs, you know, abscissa, ordinate, and XY axis. And turns out that most electrical circuits will be well represented by a couple of either sinks, you know, things that go down, or poles that go up on this imagined two-dimensional XY plane. And most circuits turn out to have the sinks, energy functions that diminish, and the point or more than one point that defines a function indicates that eventually, without external input, the transfer function will eventually diminish to zero. But there's one thing our teachers warned us about. It's called poles in the right half of the S-plane. And what happens then is really crazy, much like America today. What happens then is the signal gets amplified and amplified and amplified. There is no damping. There is no control about how big it can grow. So it grows so big that it blows out the components of the circuit. And that, my friends, is the state of American politics and foreign policy and military intervention today. Because with the aid of Fox, with the aid of, yes, the Daily News, which is now edited by a veteran of the News Corporation of Rupert Murdoch, with the dumbass PAP and PABLM served to us by ABC, NBC, BS, CNN, BSNBC, all of them, BBC. We're given not even enough attention span to thoroughly think about anything, much less enough variety of inputs to keep those poles out of the right half of the S-plane, you know what I'm saying? And on top of that, they have news actors making sure you know how you're supposed to feel about that thing, about that evil nuclear weapon threat, but never report about the 300 nuclear warheads owned by Israel. So, this is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight. And I swear to God, I cried earlier tonight. Because I saw something that scared the hell out of me. Shortly after I finished doing 5 o'clock shadow, there was a report and a video of one of the most frightening assaults I've ever seen on this day, on the occasion of the Iranian address to the United Nations General Assembly. A bunch of thugs, I know that's an Indo-Asian term, a bunch of belligerent bullies who were just, in my opinion, this short of assault, possibly lethal. A bunch of gangsters who claim to be Iranian exiles. Between a dozen, perhaps ultimately as many as 24 of them, surrounding a man in a dark suit with a white shirt, worn in the Iranian style without a tie, a man identified as Ramin Mehman Parast, who is a diplomat, who is the official spokesperson for the president of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Now, I could not identify exactly which intersection this happened at, but I did identify New York Police Department Patrol Car 3919, which late into the assault intervened and evacuated the target, who barely survived with his health. He was spat upon, he was poked, he was assaulted, and perhaps battered by these thugs who claimed to be Iranian exiles, who hate the Islamic Republic, some of whose intelligence agents identified him as the spokesperson for Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran. Now, can you imagine this happening? What would you do if this happened in Tehran? when Jay Carney went there and a mob assaulted him? What would you do if you were in, let us say, let's say Libya, and your ambassador was murdered? Why is that wrong there? And with all of the security, all of the Secret Service, all the helicopters, all the spies, all the homeland, dumbland security, could a man of this stature barely escape such an assault? I've said it many times, security is BS. American Homeland Security is nothing but a military rewarding white supremacy process that is ineffective and superstitious, because this event never should have happened. And in this video, we saw the man fleeing with maybe one associate or bodyguard. I don't know what they were. But he was spat upon, he was assaulted, he was threatened, and may have been assaulted. Here at the summit of the United Nations and American national security, Obama is a liar, America is a joke, Clinton is a criminal, and Homeland Security, all those announcements you hear in the subway are complete BS. Because the great United States of America could not even protect a diplomat. Obamaism has turned New York into Benghazi. Obama has turned New York into Benghazi. And I'm not even started yet. I haven't even gotten to the real chill of the soul that this event represents. But I want you to hear some witnesses describing as it occurred. You'll hear the audio. What the video portrays is a man not offering physical resistance but attempting to flee. A crowd of backpacking thugs in white t-shirts, purporting to be aggrieved exiles of Iran. And I swear to God, this chilled my soul. This is just 2 or 3 minutes. You'll hear some of the recordists. And as this is going on, the poor man is fleeing. He goes up against the traffic in an avenue to escape these people who are damn near taking his life. This is the chase and pursuit of Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's spokesperson, Ramin Mehmanparsa. Ramin Mehmanparast. Look, they're getting him, says the recordist. No police. No police protection. Homeland Security is a joke.
Yep.
A woman says, "Who's the guy in charge?" This is an atrocity in progress. At this point, they are spitting, assaulting, touching, and otherwise assaulting the Iranian presidency spokesperson, Ramin Mehmanparast. Oh my God, she says. The man says, oh! What are they hitting him with?
What
What the hell? What the hell are these people doing? He doesn't know who he is yet. He's President Ahmadinejad's spokesperson. Are you kidding me? She can't believe it. At this point, finally, a goddamn New York City police car comes up. Car number 3919. And eventually, some white shirts show up. They're too busy doing non-security elsewhere, but they finally show up and put him in a police car and spirit him away to safety from these Iranian self-identifying Iranian exile thugs. I do not know who they were, but they were all wearing the same form of white T-shirt and may well have been present at Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza, where the bonfire of the insanities was underway, with Americans being psychosized into hating Iran while not even knowing the extent to which they're subverting it and using Stuxnet and putting the world at even greater danger by trying to destroy the control systems of the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, certified compliance of the Iranian nuclear energy program. And this is when it hit me. When I really did come to tears. Because I saw something I've seen before. I saw what happens when a bunch of men united in an insane belief system get together. And I swear to God, I don't understand how women can walk around every day knowing the volatility of male behavior. But I saw this behavior before. I saw it on the 20th of November, 2011. I saw exactly this same behavior reflected in the blood on the left-hand side of the face of Muammar Gaddafi. I saw it reflected in the face of Muammar Gaddafi, where his persistence of life, despite a bullet hole in his head, made him say, why are you doing this? Reminded me of Gethsemane. When I saw the same people, different individuals, same cattle mob behavior. And this is what I want us to talk about tonight. The interconnection. What is it that unleashes the devil of a mob? I want you to think about that. I saw, it may not have been the same individuals, but it was the same process. The same people, the same devils were present about this time in November in Libya, when with the blessing of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, they murdered Muammar Gaddafi. This is not the same sound, but yet it is the same sound. This is when Muammar Gaddafi was, quote, captured, sodomized, and murdered by people of the same soul as the ones who acted in New York City today. Oh!
The government of Libya announced the death of Muammar Gaddafi. This marks the end of a long and painful chapter for the people of Libya, who now have the opportunity to determine their own destiny in a new and democratic Libya.
If he takes the country to war in Iraq without a vote of Congress, which will not exist, then he should be impeached.
Clinton says she would like to see Colonel Gaddafi captured or killed. We examined why she decided to take such an uncompromising position.
So, I mean, that is the land of unconfirmed.
Yes, we came. We saw, he died.
Did it have anything to do with your visit?
No, I'm sure it did.
We have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it?
I think this is a very hard choice, but we think the price is worth it.
It's not about justice, it's not about agenda, it's not about mobilizing people, it's about dialing for corporate dollars. These two parties have sold the U.S. government and the American people to the highest bidders.
This is Earthwatch on WBAI in New York. I'm Robert Knight. And that's what today's event in New York City, with all of the fakery of Homeland Security and subway warnings and all these bag checks and stuff, the cops could not even protect a diplomat. This nation, this city, to my shame as a New Yorker, has been turned into Benghazi, where an American diplomat died. Did not come to that today. But there is something about a meta-evil of the unleashing of political ambitions and media lies and invidiousness, which is the contrary of the mission of Pacifica. There is a madness upon the media today. And a man could well easily have lost his life because of the communicable disease of rage and hatred and ethnic and religious division. We're here to understand war and preserve, protect, and restore peace. This is Pacifica Radio, and that is our mission. You're tuned to WBAI in New York, 99.5 megahertz FM. And here's the other reason I cried tonight. Because what happened in Benghazi, what happened in Libya to Muammar Gaddafi, what happened to J. Christopher Stevens and three other Americans, Obama and Bloomberg and that dumb woman who's in charge of Homeland Security and all their theater and all their military supremacy and racial stereotyping, it don't mean crap. When it came down to protecting a diplomat, all of these fools failed. We need to get rid of Homeland Security Department. We need to get back to being the true spirit, principles, and constitutionality of America. But like I was saying, the other reason I cried today was because what happened in New York City today, what happened on October 20th, 2011, in Libya, reminded me of another thing, and here's the theme. What happens when a bunch of men have a communicable psychosis, a mental disease, that reinforces their inadequacies with violence? Well, I'll tell you what happens. Here's an example of what happens. Early part of the last century, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street,
lynch mob.
We were sitting out in the yard, some neighbors, and pretty soon we saw people come running through the yard, just lots and lots of people. So Mama had stopped once. She said, "What are you doing running? What's going on?" She said, "But they're burning Tulsa down."
This sparse section of Tulsa, Oklahoma is called Greenwood. And believe it or not, 75 years ago was also known to a lot of people as America's Black Wall Street. That's because black businesses in this community flourished, despite the fact that the city was deeply segregated. But what a lot of people don't know is that it was also the site of one of the nation's worst race riots.
She would send her and she would say, "I have a pass for Mrs. Mayo."
Eddie Faye Gates is writing a book about the history of the Tulsa riot of 1921. She says the black community has never forgotten the devastation. But today, 75 years later, few people in Tulsa's white community are willing to talk about the racially motivated riot.
People like to be known for the good and the great things, and it's just natural not to want your dirty linen aired. But also, on the other hand, you cannot have a truthful, honest nation if you do not face up to your history.
Which is exactly what Tony Pringer is doing. You see, his late grandfather, Herb Johnson, was a fireman during the riot. He was also a member of the Ku Klux Klan.
Being in the fire department, it was the thing to belong in the Klan. Also, it was good for promotions and supposedly the Klan, he said, actually got poor baskets for the poor and at Christmas time and did a number of good things. But they were also very extremely prejudiced against Catholics, Jewish people, or especially blacks. And so I think a great deal of people were at that time.
At the turn of the century, Tulsa was a booming oil town. On the other side of the tracks, Greenwood was also prosperous. It had 15 grocery stores, 2 black newspapers, 2 black public schools, 4 drugstores, and 2 movie houses.
They had dance halls and everything, music. It was, in fact, the people were happy because they were independent. They didn't have to depend on anyone.
Greenwood continued to be prosperous in 1921, even after a depression hit the oil industry.
Some of the whites were losing their jobs. They resented these black people having that money and that wealth. There was just no respect for black people. It was just as if you even thought about them at all, it was as if they were almost aliens. There was no respect. It was an attitude that they were second-class citizens.
Black Tulsans were often degraded by white clerks in downtown department stores.
They had signs up on all of the stores downtown, "No colored wanted."
So those conditions were there, and a riot was just waiting to happen. The incidents, the catalyst that started it was an elevator incident. Dick Rowland was a 19-year-old shoeshine boy who worked downtown. He worked with Robert Fairchild.
He was a shoeshine boy like I was, and I was shining shoes at the same place he was. Because of the discrimination, the Negro was not allowed to use the restroom in the business establishment. So one morning around 10 o'clock, May 31st, he wanted to use the restroom, which was located on the fourth floor. So he went to get on the elevator, and it so happened that the operator had stopped the elevator, so the floor of the elevator was not even with the floor of the building. When Dick Rowland went to get on, he stumbled. And in his effort to break your fall, he reached out. And he touched the lady who operated the elevator, and she hollered rape. They arrested him. And that afternoon, the Tribune came out telling about what had happened, and it looked like there would be a lynching tonight. Intelligent.
And without any investigation, Dick Rowland was taken to the courthouse in downtown Tulsa. But Greenwood's citizens were not about to see Rowland lynched. 50 black men armed with shotguns and pistols blocked the courthouse.
Finally, an old man, white fellow, about 65 years of age and about 5 feet 5 inches tall, weighed about 140 pounds, walked up to Negro that weighed 250. And he said, "Nigga, what you doing with that gun?" He said, "I'm gonna use it if I need to." He said, "No, you ain't. You give it to me." He tried to take it, and that set the riot off.
Tulsa was in the grip of a full-scale riot on the night of May 31st, 1921. Bullets were flying and dead bodies started piling up. All night long, the battle raged. The governor called in the militia, and by daybreak, an estimated 5,000 white Tulsans with weapons and torches had descended on Greenwood. And it was at this railroad crossing that a group of armed black Tulsa residents made their last stand in a desperate effort to try and save their community. Unfortunately, they were overwhelmed by the white mob, which broke through here, headed down this road into the center of Greenwood. And it wasn't long after that before the entire community was in flames.
My first remark to Mama was, "We better get out of here, because they're killing us and burning our places."
Mama said, "Well, let me get my little things together and go too. I don't know what's happened." And then we looked out, we could see the fire over the hill in great balls of smoke.
I was only 5 years old. They came into our house and destroyed it at the same time they destroyed the Mount Zion Baptist Church.
And the mobs took over. They took over the exits, the roads out. They would not let ambulances in to treat the wounded.
Not all of White Tulsa was rioting. While Tony Pringer's grandfather was out patrolling the streets with his rifle, his grandmother was helping to save the lives of black women caught in the crossfire.
And Grandma was in the yard waving him, her name was Molly Johnson, waving him into her cellar. And eventually, I understand she had like 8 or 9 black ladies in there.
On June 1st, the second day of the riot, a squadron of airplanes dropped bombs on Greenwood, reducing America's Black Wall Street to a pile of rocks.
And as I went, everything else was burned. Nothing left standing. Hospitals, schools, churches, everything.
Oh, it was pitiful. See, in fact, it just ruined us.
Meanwhile, black people were rounded up and forced to march to makeshift internment camps.
And it was a long, hot day. But if you slowed up, they'd shoot down at your feet and tell you to hurry up.
By the end of the second day, over 300 people were dead and 4,000 others homeless. Many blacks left Tulsa for good, and Greenwood would never be the same.
That was a 75-year conspiracy in Tulsa to just ignore that riot. There are no papers in the archives about the May 31st Tulsa Tribune paper, which had a lead story about "To Lynch a Nigger Tonight."
In fact, the whole story was suppressed for decades, and only recently have Tulsans come forward. As for Greenwood, the neighborhood barely recovered. Just a block-long string of buildings remained. How different is this community from the way it was at the time of the riots?
Oh, it's very, very different. Economically, we don't have an area of strong economic growth. Black people. We don't have any place that we can claim our own like we did then. And so we have lost that. We have lost the Black Wall Street legacy.
But those left in Greenwood remember. They raised enough money to construct this monument to Tulsa's Black Wall Street. And on June 1st, 1996, the 75th anniversary of the riot, Tulsa's black and white community raised their voices in a special ceremony. State Representative Don Ross introduced Robert Fairchild to the audience, and he got a standing ovation.
and Ross used his office to make a long overdue statement.
No perfect apology has ever been made by a public official. Please accept our apology on behalf of the state of Oklahoma and the city of Tulsa.
That was significant. It was a coming together of the races. It was a joining of hands. It was, I think now we can put this to rest. And that's what history is about, recognizing what happened in the past, learning your lessons from it, and moving on. We're ready to move on now.
Black and white Tulsans are more aware of the story of the riots. And as a result, more white Tulsans are coming forward.
You know, some people might be reluctant to speak about something like this. Why are you?
Well, the political and racial climate of today, I think, is going downhill. And I think everybody should do everything they can to stop the prejudice and stop the racial problems building up in our society today. And if we know more about the past and the results and the massacres and things, maybe it'll make people stop and have a second thought about this and realize we're all brothers under the skin.
Tulsa, the African-American community in Tulsa, was relatively prosperous, well-educated. I mean, they had done everything that they were supposed to do in terms of the American dream. You work hard, you save your money, you go to school, you buy property. I mean, this is what they had done under horrific conditions. I mean, when you look at the context of what black America looked like at the time, the fact that they were able to do this is one of the things that we herald in terms of when we talk about the immigrant story, right? But instead, this created such seething resentment in Tulsa that you had black doctors, black attorneys, black businessmen. I mean, in fact, this area of Tulsa was known as Black Wall Street, to give you some sense of how much it held in terms of value, in terms of esteem, in terms of worth. But that resentment in Tulsa was so intense and that it was just waiting for a spark to just ignite it. That spark was a black messenger was delivering a message. You know, they had messengers back in the day, was delivering a message downtown. And he gets in the elevator and there's a white woman in the elevator. I believe she was the elevator operator. And from the first floor through the third floor, I mean, the elevator may have bumped or something, and he hit her a little bit, but he didn't hit her. He just kind of brushed him against it. She yelled, "Rape." Now, to understand what the charge of rape means, when a white woman yells rape against a black man in this period, because part of understanding the violence that African Americans faced was to deal with the issue of what was called the sanctity of white womanhood. And that sanctity of white womanhood said that all white women had to be protected from black beast, so-called black beast. And when she yelled rape, now the charge was absolutely improbable from the first floor to the third floor. Improbable. But it was the spark. They couldn't wait because he was the son of a prominent black businessman. So they hauled him, the police hauled him down to the station. Well, the black elite came down to the station going, you know, this is my son, this is my boy. My son wouldn't do this. What's his bail? And I'm like, oh, uppity. How dare you come down here? How dare you? And because the African-American community sensed that the sense of anger and violence was rising, it wasn't one or two that came down. There were several of them that came down. I'm like, oh, so what, are you going to storm the jail? They said, no, but we're here for justice. We're here for justice. And then the lynch mob began to form in Tulsa. It was like, oh, these are some uppity Negroes who need to be put back in their place. And the violence began. Black Tulsa was, the lynch mob rode in, but they also came in airplanes, dropping bombs on Tulsa, Black Tulsa. There are descriptions and depictions of African Americans being decapitated, being forced to kneel down and just having their heads severed. There are pictures of the strafings, of the bombings, of the shootings. Nobody's quite sure what the death toll is. But when you look at the pictures, what you see is an area that had once been thriving. What we say is the American dream, absolutely leveled by the violence, by the lynch mobs, by the airplanes, by the bombs, leveled. Black Tulsa has never recovered. As the bombings are happening, as the violence is happening, as Tulsa is on fire, the governor of Oklahoma is like, whoa, maybe, I probably should. The feds are looking up going, this is not our issue. I bet you stopped. Wow. Nothing we can do here. And that is so indicative of the imbalance that has happened in terms of justice, in terms of rights, in terms of the protection of basic civil and human rights for African Americans in the United States.
Some of the sounds of yet another rage mob, the ones that killed Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, the ones that destroyed a black civilization in Greenwood and in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and who assaulted a diplomat of Iranian documentation today in New York City for all of the fakery of Homeland Security. FBI, CIA, yeah, right, Homeland Security, New York Police. They could arrest 800 occupiers on the Brooklyn Bridge, but they cannot protect a diplomat. Obamaism has turned America, has turned New York City into Benghazi. The same flames of mob rule were unleashed also in Tulsa, where one of only two known assaults, domestic airborne assaults with incendiaries and explosives, to my knowledge, has taken place in America. One in Philadelphia under Mayor Wilson Good, and Barack Obama is pretty much the Wilson Good of today. And in Tulsa. Tulsa, what is the difference between Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Aleppo, Syria? What is the difference between Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Sirte, Libya? What is the difference? We, as Americans, have allowed ourselves to let a person from the other group become president and think that we have done our mission for peace and justice. And it only put us to sleep. It is time for Hillary Clinton to resign and for there to be an investigation into the impeachment of President Barack Obama. As a Southern black man whose stepfather, as a child, had to hide from the Ku Klux Klan at a rally in Kinston, North Carolina, and I, who myself live not far from the shadow of the hanging tree of Wilkesboro, North Carolina, I will not betray my heritage or analysis by confining the insanity to the easy target about, oh, well, you know, Negroes have been discriminated. No, here's my point, and what I want you to help us with, the discussion tonight. Don't just keep it on black and white. Don't just keep it on murderous Iranian exiles. Do not just keep it on the Al-Qaeda Libyan Islamic Fighting Group, Mujahideen, Salafi jihadis. Let's not keep it on the Israeli settlers. Let's find what unites all of these things. This is WBAI New York Pacifica Radio, dedicated to the mission of seeking peace or understanding why it does not exist. My name is Robert Knight, and you're listening to a program called Earthwatch. Phone number here is 212-209-2900. And tonight we're talking about a universal phenomenon. Mob rule. Murderous mob rule. No matter the caste or religion, the editorials and content of the Daily News are now indistinguishable from the New York Post. Calling President of Iran a Jew-hating Hitler based on a Farsi mistranslation. All of these things feature a religious, ethnic, or dogma-based mob or mode of behavior with fanatical male enforcers who seek to exceed each other's rage. And eventually, if uncontrolled, murderous outrage. Well, damn. All the phones are lit tonight. This is Earthwatch. I hope there are some psychologists who can explain this avalanche phenomenon of murderous rage. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Robert. Listen to me, all right? President Obama had done some things that, as a progressive, I wasn't in agreement with. But to go as far as to say he's impeachable, I respectfully disagree with you on this.
Why is that wrong? Because impeachment is simply an investigation into the crime. The actual trial takes place in the Senate. This is Earthwatch. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, Tom from the Bronx here.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I like to say that it's extreme ignorance that causes a lot of these situations. I know that the same type of riot took place in Florida too, right? Redwood or Rosewood? Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Make your point
Rosewood,
quickly. We got a lot of calls.
They had a terrible... Were you aware of that, Rosewood, Florida?
Go ahead and make your major point.
Anyway, to make a long story short, the Ku Klux Klan was beginning to die in the 1920s. And it was the last roar of the dinosaur. They were trying to hold on.
Well, I disagree with you there because historical studies have shown that the rise of racist organizations and their public behavior is exactly correlated with the state of the economy. This is Earthwatch, and you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Robert.
Yes.
Hello, Robert. Interesting juxtaposition of the events that you put together for tonight. I was wondering, what happened to mob violence in reference to Benito Mussolini, since he was somewhat similar fate?
I understand that he was lynched, yes.
But I'm saying, is that not the same? I don't mean to transcend the question over, but it is an interesting question you
okay,
present.
I take your point, and it's a very well-made point.
Interesting.
And let me juxtapose this. The murder of Osama bin Laden, should that have occurred? Or should he have been brought to trial?
Good question there. I think a trial would have been the optimum question. But
So why does the president make a victory lap over violating the very stated aim of bringing a criminal to justice, if indeed he would have been proved to do so, to have been so in a court of law?
Well, you and I both know that bin Laden was a complete setup of central intelligence and Pakistani, and I mean, that's just...
Going all the way back to Mujahideen to oppose Russia in Afghanistan,
well,
or the Soviet Union at the time.
The question about mob violence was put together, but I think in this case you're talking about who controls the mob, and in that case that's a question of the major looking behind the curtain to find out who exactly is the wizard.
Well, as a professional in the media, I think that there is a new phenomenon with the liquidity of transmission of information, whether reliable, accurate, true, or well-meaning, that kind of accelerates, like those right-hand S-plane poles I was talking about that tend towards inflammation and do not have a retardant to protect life, dignity, or the electrical circuit.
Indeed, and I would make the point again, if you were expecting the New York City Police Department to protect anything, considering their history, we can have a long, long debate on that one.
Well, they eventually got there and evacuated the victim, the target, but in the meantime, you and I and everybody we know has surrendered rights and endures harassment. in the subways, if you see something, say something, and our entire attitude and enactment of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights has changed. And this president has taken that even further than George Bush. And I thank you for the call.
Robert, one last thing.
Yes.
Real quick. It should be noted that the man featured prominently in the murder of the brother leader Muammar Gaddafi was just on Tuesday.
Died
from injuries that he received from people in the...
Yes, from another form of the same thing. Yes, indeed. Our job is... See, I don't think any of us is sufficiently intelligent or informed to know all the nuances of aggrieved people all around the world.
Indeed.
We don't even know our own country.
Well,
but I'm trying to get beyond the local, the proximate motivations to see if there is some field of carbon dioxide that can be applied over the inflamed brain of masses of people.
Interesting question. We shall posit on this for a longer time. Let's put it that way.
Thank you, sir. We'll continue in future weeks.
Thank you.
This is Earthwatch, 212-209-2900, and you are on the air.
Yes. I just think that the people that's in the media, and they're always got to call Obama out his name and stuff like that. I think they're a coward themselves.
Okay. Thank you for that. Do you think I've called him out of his name? This is Earthwatch. You're on the air. Hello? Pick up your phone.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, hello.
Hi, I would like to speak on the air, if I may.
You already are. Talk to your phone, not the radio.
Hello.
Hey.
Oh, Robert, I've listened to you for years and, worked at BAI picking up phones. And the bottom line is we're probably around the same age, and I've always been a student of history. And eons ago, and when I was an undergrad at NYU and had one of these name professors, you could just see him in the 20s in the raccoon coat up at Yale. It was a political science
Bula,
course.
Bula.
I basically wrote a paper stating that the 1960s were very similar, the 60s here, to the Weimar Republic. And then you had people who just threw the Deutschmarks up in the air, young men on the corners with no work, and, at the top of their adolescent testosterone. And I said, in time, this country will go fascist, and we will experience a worldwide depression, the likes of which we have never seen. I've been my whole life, probably like you, a truth speaker. And to me, as a native New Yorker, my greatest education was always having friends of every culture, every background.
Yes, 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 yes.
And also, there's been a very determined destruction of the public school and colleges and universities. I went to public schools right here in New York.
And the privatizing of them.
Yes.
The corporatizing.
Exactly. And also, we are living in an age, when I first saw these survivor programs, I can't watch them, I thought, well, this is bread and circuses, like ancient Rome.
Yes.
Everything is pornographic.
Oh, and isn't, you've hit on something, thank you. Because isn't the conceit that one gang gets a simultaneous antagonism against the other?
Absolutely. And the epidemic of plastic surgery, everything is fraudulent and most superficial. We have lost our ability, and part of it was the responsibility of schools and parents to think critically, to learn about history, to be open-minded, and not listen to the media. I haven't listened to media or read a newspaper for years, Robert, but I mean, when sneakily on New Year's Eve, Obama signed that bill where any American citizen could be picked up.
The NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act.
Yes.
I got a list for the guy who asked about impeachment, which is not the same as the trial.
When that happened, I would speak to people. A lot of people like zombies. I think that's why vampire and zombie movies and TV are so popular. I said, do you realize we've lost our constitution, habeas corpus? The truth speakers like Julian Assange and the judge who, by the way, you know, is a judge in Spain, and came out against practicing.
Balthazar Garzon, I believe his name is.
Yes. I said, and the brave young military man who's, you know, they threw the key away on him. He was the messenger to Assange. All these things going on, Robert, I worked in the Department of State in my very early 20s, and I have a keen sense of justice.
What kind of desk were you at?
What?
What kind of desk were you at?
I was working here in a privately owned townhouse by Columbia University. Here was the title, Department of State.
You might have run into Barack Obama.
And at that stage of my life, this Agency for International Development, Office of Population Studies, the studies were in the Middle Eastern countries where mesh units were just walking in, sterilizing all the women. Forget the men and vasectomies. To me, I was never for women's lib. I'm for people's liberation, because wherever you have ageism, you have racism and sexism and all of it. And
now you're taking us somewhere.
Yes. And when I worked there, I was thinking of going and getting my degree in law, but I knew after this, you know, the people rebelled in the Middle Eastern countries. The women didn't want to be sterilized. Well, how do you finesse that? You hire someone who's lived in that culture, who's fluent in Arabic, to convince presidents of medical universities and make it legal policy. I could talk to you forever, but I don't want to take up time.
Well,
I would love to leave a message. I don't have email currently, but I'd like to, maybe if I write.
Call the switchboard, 209-2800, or write. No, you know what? I love letters.
Yes.
To Robert Knight, WBAI, 120 Wall Street, New York, 10005.
Okay, Robert.
Thank you. I'd love to catch up with you.
I've been listening to you for years, and I have total respect for you. And I have felt for years they should have impeached the Bushians.
Yes.
You know, we probably hold very parallel opinions.
Okay, looking forward to it.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Bye. This is Earthwatch. Quickly, I've still got another tidbit for you. You're on the air. Hello.
Good evening,
hey.
Robert. This is Stefan.
Hello, Stefan.
I feel, to use a sort of inappropriate phrase, I do feel your pain. I think you not only had the "Why hast thou forsaken me, Gethsemane" feeling, but perhaps even the experience on the road to Damascus. And that can be a painful moment, but I believe it can be clarifying. With respect to this mob attack, I would like, I picked up your information, so I was on online and went to YouTube. Did you look at a view from a window overlooking the intersection?
That was not me. Someone else recorded that, and the link that I played was not publicly listed. It may be by now, for all I know. But
well, what I was able to pull up was a view from...
it looked like a second-story window something like that.
Right, but yeah. I've also found another one.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Which you would be interested in, because it's a street view taken with a cell phone cam that follows... The diplomat, whose name is, as you said, Menam Parast, that gives some information in some regard about the attackers with respect to the language that they speak to or yell at the diplomat. And there seems to be Farsi, but there also seems to be Hebrew. And this particular video is called Jewish Protesters Attack Iranian Diplomats.
Okay, that's very interesting, because the first and most widely distributed report identified the assailants as being of Iranian exile vintage. Both things may well be true. This
Indeed.
Is like many things, a breaking story, but we're
Indeed, but if you, you know, search on YouTube for Jewish protesters attack Iranian diplomat, and filter by upper
well,
date.
You know what? You are a catalyst, sir, and I hope that you will stay in touch, because, let's see, this will give me time to present this, because this is exactly the right alchemical moment to present it. So, yes.
Yeah, what's clear, however, is that, he was attacked, not just poked. One of the voices says, they're attacking him. So I think, or hitting him. And you can see where he is. Someone picked up something.
See, I didn't say that. I said that he was assaulted, but and I said, and possibly battered.
Right. Well, he was definitely battered, attacked. And I
didn't
assault.
Say that because I couldn't see it in what I saw.
Right. Assault would seem to be correct, not just battery. But moving on, Jeff.
Well, assault is the threat of violence. Battery is the enactment of it.
Okay. My legal background is limited.
I hope mine remains so.
But I think that one answer to the more universal question is that I think humans living in the large groups that they began living in 5,000-6,000 years ago creates some bad psychological functions. And then there is always Norman O'Brien's idea of sort of the death instinct. I think that's part of what gets into this. But I would say sort of less broadly, there are two things that link the episodes that you've mentioned and many others, of course. Whatever, Kristallnacht certainly occurs to me. One is there's always the demagogue, isn't there, to channel some, you know, vague polymorphous anxieties among the group of us Homo sapien primates. And the appeal of it, I believe, certainly, is that mob attacks like this against a diplomat, to be very specific, is so much easier. This hands-on, in a way, dealing with a social problem seems so much easier and so much less complicated than, let's say, the alternate of understanding.
Listen, you are so brilliant. Please call back next week. I want to put this on the record to bring the whole story back to closure.
Great.
Thank you. I really respect your insight.
Thank you very much.
This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight. And in 2009, the man who was the target of these assaults, the president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, met with Jewish leaders right here in New York City, and this is what it sounded like, and you tell me if what happened today was justified. This is Earthwatch.
Senior rabbi, the distinguished rabbi Moshe, dove back to say the words of greeting for us.
This is a meeting between leading Orthodox Jews and rabbis here in New York City in the year 2009 with one Iranian president named Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
The president with all the blessings.
We would like to read the inscription. May this gift be a token of gratitude for the sweetness and love you have extended to Jews and all mankind. On behalf of World Torah Jewry, presented by Neturei Karate International, New York, USA.
The president is of the world leaders
who was exemplary in his comprehension and understanding totally the difference between Judaism, the spirituality, the religion, the servitude, and subservience to God, and the antithetical concept of Zionism, which is a materialism, godless in its essence, and a goal just for nationalism, and which is something forbidden clearly and distinctly by the Torah. Judaism requires of the Jewish people to be humble, to be loyal citizens in every country in where they're residing. Zionism started 100 years ago, and from its inception, from its beginning, all the rabbinical authorities were in opposition. Only because of the Holocaust, the death of so many leaders, that the Jews unfortunately fell prey to the power of Zionism, and they became leaderless. Many leaders died, and we didn't have people to lead us. The few leaders that did, who remained true to the Torah, whether it was in Palestine, whether throughout the world, continued and still to today stand up and are true to the Torah and oppose Zionism, as untold many Jews throughout the world and in Palestine stand true in opposition to Zionism, true to the Torah, true to our friendship to all the Muslim leaders and the Muslim people. And we call them the sheep, who fell prey to Zionism. It's simply because of the weakness of what they've seen, of they lost relatives and things like that, have made them fall prey to this onslaught of propaganda. But it's not Judaism, and again, we stress that the president should be know for a fact that there is many, many, really untold thousands and thousands, an untold number as you would travel around the world, who are really true to the Torah and will never fall for this concept of Zionism. We all pray for the speedy and peaceful dismantlement of the state, so we can again live in peace as we have for hundreds of years, without any more suffering or bloodshed for any of God's creation.
Meeting in the year 2009 between Orthodox Jewish leaders, rabbis, and others with a man named Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. And that is the reveal that concludes tonight's edition of 5 o'clock Earth Watch. No, actually, earlier today, Jim Freund, who comes up next with Hour of the Wolf, I did present the General Assembly speech of President Ahmadinejad.
Upon Earth Shadow?
Earth Shadow. I love that. Yes, of course. Yes. Earth Shadow.
Earth Shadow.
Yeah.
And that has a real...
I'm living in an earth shadow.
Well, yes. going to be catty about it.
Well, you can see how bright the next program is going to be. So it is with great...
I've got a great guest. Forget me.
Great joy that I surrender the con to my friend and colleague, Jim Freund, with what I'm sure is going to be a brilliant edition of Hour of the Wolf. And this is WBAI New York.
Hey, this is Hope Bob. You're listening to WBAI.
Pleasure and honor to meet such a star.
Let the music take your mind. Just release and you will find. You're gonna fly away. Glad you're going my way. I love it when we're cruising together. The music is...
And Earth Shadow, Earth Watch, and 5 O'Clock Shadow were all brought to you live with portions on recording. You are tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, New York City, WBAI, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. Thank you. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and, oh yes, the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. Okay, since our last fundraising drive, we have given you great show after great show after great show, just to be modest. Well, so this tonight will be no different. Stay tuned for Ronsky. As mentioned, this is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Okay. You're not supposed to have two readings in one night, you know? The KGB Fantastic Fiction readings are the third Wednesday of every month. So we, the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, try to stick to the first Tuesday of every month, but so far this season that hasn't been quite possible. And also something that they don't have at KGB, they don't have the flexibility of adding a date or anything like that. So this conversation digresses in two ways. Number one, I got an email from Ellen Datlow saying, Ross Caveney is coming into New York, and we are already booked. I thought you might be interested. To which my answer was, yes. Okay, so that's part one. But because the trip is part of a book tour, when Ross was limited. So, as I said, I have this flexibility. So we're doing our second reading this month, in fact, tomorrow night. I was going to do it Tuesday night, our normal night, until Ross sent me an email. Isn't that Erev Yom Kippur? And it's like, oh my God, yes, of course it is. So it's like, okay. So we ended up going on Thursday. You're shaking your head like you don't remember that or something?
I was just saying, honestly, I mean, I'm a clueless Brit.
Yeah, well, I'm a, I'm Jewish. I should know these things, right?
I'm Irish.
One way or the other, you picked that out. So we chose the 27th. Now, this is what happens. On the 20th, you know, so we have our usual wonderful space, the Soho Gallery for Digital Art. Initially, we were told the gallery was going to be renovated this month, so I wouldn't have it available. Then it turned out, no, we will have it available. Then, a short time ago, the owner of the gallery, who basically gives us the space virtually for free, you know, we pay him like, you know, $30 or $40. So that's virtually for free when you're renting a really cool space like that, had an offer of, $2,000 for the evening. So, yeah, we got bumped. $30 versus $2,000, well, okay. It was a hard decision on his part, but he made it. So we're going to be in a special place tomorrow. But we had arranged this, but not before, other people had decided, well, Jim is never on Thursdays. Jim does his thing on Tuesdays. So why don't we have a reading at Blue Stockings? Yay! And this is a new reading series. This is the Kindred reading series. And because they chose the same night as ours, I am not going to tell you anything about it. I'm not going to tell you that the wonderful Kay Tempest Bradford will be reading tomorrow. She is a speculative short story writer by day, an activist, a blogger by night, and a gadget nerd in the interstices. I wonder. Actually, she's a gadget nerd at all times. So she attended Clarion West Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Workshop in 2003. Her fiction has appeared in Abyss and Apex, Farthing Magazine, Strange Horizons, Sybil's Garage, Electric Velocipede, Podcasts. Well, Podcastle is a podcast, you know. It's like didn't appear in it, on it. The Federations, edited by John Joseph Adams, and Interfictions, edited by Delia Sherman and Theodora Goss. Her most recent publications are Dark Faith, Invocations, edited, let's pronounce this right, Maurice Brodus?
I have no idea.
I'm thinking Brodus, and Jerry Gordon, and Diverse Energies, edited by Toby Bakel. Okay, you also should not go tomorrow and attend when Ebi Zoboi is going to be reading. Now, her I am not familiar with, so I'm really annoyed that I'm not going to be there. Yes.
Well, I'm feeling very upset at not making it to Tempest's reading at Blue Stocking because she came to my reading at Blue Stocking on Monday.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to Tempest about this because there. Let me just finish this. Okay, Ebi Anu Zoboi was born in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. Is a graduate of Clarion West. Who isn't?
Me.
Her fiction can be found in Dark Matter, Reading the Bones, edited by the wonderful and amazing Cherie Renee Thomas, and Haiti Noir, this one I'm not familiar with, edited by Edwidge Danticat. She's a winner of the Gulliver Travel Grant, given annually by the Speculative Literature Foundation, and is an MFA student writing for children and young adults at Vermont of Fine Arts. This is going to be tomorrow, starting at 7 p.m., at Blue Stockings Bookstore at 172 Allen Street between Stanton and Rivington, and there is free admission. So, since we're doing a reading tomorrow, you must not attend this at Blue Stocking at 7 p.m. until 9 p.m.
Yes, well, it's very sad, but there you go.
I mean, it's just like, I'm not going to promote that.
No.
No. I mean, how dare they? It was really sad. It was really annoying. Jen Brissett and I were like crying on each other's shoulders on double booking.
Well, it's all very emotional, but let's get on.
But you see, here's the thing. Their thing runs 7 to 9, and we're starting at 8.
Yes.
So I'm wondering.
So people could look in at them and then dash across town.
Exactly, including, and I've already had this discussion with her, Tempest. It's like, yeah. And Jen. It's like, come on over. After your thing is done, you'll be a little late, but come on.
Well, we'll just have to see if they make it.
But what is the other thing? Well, as mentioned, the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings with Roz Kaveny and Deborah Grabian. And Veronica Sheenis is our guest host. The wonderful Professor Sheenis, who is the only person I ever had on Hour of the Wolf, who I not only didn't have to explain what Hour of the Wolf was to her, she said, oh, well, Varg Timan is a very old myth and it goes back to here. And she knew more about it than anybody, including me or Margot Adler, who named the show or whatever. So, Deborah Grabian is a writer, 18 published novels, including her current series, The J.P. Kincaid Chronicles. She is a musician, songwriter, cook, traveler, editor, publisher, music editor, and feral cat